So hello everyone, welcome to All About Symbian Insight number 22. Welcome from me, Steve Litchfield, and also from...
Me, Rafe Blanford.
And Stefan from Intumobile.com.
Is it just Intumobile these days, Stefan? I know there's some connection between you and Nokia, and just for the purposes of disclosure, who else do you work for now?
Well, about 2 weeks ago, I accepted a position within S60, and my official role is a technology leader engager. So essentially what that means is we have people who sign up to talk about our products with their friends and family, and then they contact us to tell us how the experience went, and that helps us perfect how we advertise S60 to the mass market and to perfect our message to the wider consumer audience.
So let's get this straight. You're being paid for something that most of us have been doing for free for years.
Isn't it beautiful?
Okay. Well, let's moving on. We have a reverse things from the usual format. Let's just do software first because there's one particularly hot release that came out last night. Skype Mobile. Rafe, you're the first to hear about this and try it out. What are your impressions so far?
Yes, actually, I heard about it from Ricky Cadner of Symbian Guru, so thanks to him for tipping me off to that. I tried it out last night, and it's actually a Java program, so it runs on both S60 and UIQ, and it also runs on a number of feature phones, such as the Nokia Series 40 and some of the Sony Ericsson phones too. The problem with it being a Java version is that it's not actually perfect in terms of the look of the application. At times, it can be slightly slow. But what it does is it implements Skype to Skype chats and Skype out chats, so that's calling, but also implements Skype instant messaging or Skype chat. The problem with the actual calling is it does it by doing it over the PSTN network, that's the phone network. So what it effectively does, whenever there's an outgoing call or an incoming call, it makes it over the cellular network to a local phone number. So that does actually mean you'll have to pay for the incoming calls using your Skype credit and the outgoing calls using your sort of subscriber plan from your calling minutes. So unlike Skype, it's not completely free to use in terms of Skype to Skype calls, so I'm sure that's going to put some people off. However, it does work, and it's a solution for Skype on mobile. This solution is actually very similar to what a company called iScoot provides. But I suspect there's going to be some disappointed people out there because it's not really a true voice over IP solution. But I think for a first effort it's pretty impressive, and certainly the application itself has been quite nicely put together and is relatively easy to use. I guess the only downside that I really would complain about in a big way was I found the call quality was very variable. Calling landlines was generally okay. Calling to another Skype user on a PC was a less positive experience, shall we say. It sounded like people were in a cave. I know I called you, Steve. I mean, what did you think of the quality?
I was pretty disappointed, really. I've tried various voice over IP solutions in the past, and this ranks as down at the very bottom. But again, it's beta. The comments on voice quality over Fring, which is a true, as you people know, a true native data-based voice over IP solution for S60. I think Fring call quality can be a bit iffy sometimes. So I still have reservations over this whole voice over IP thing in the real world when compared to the quality of normal voice calls. Stefan, any opinions on all this?
I would say that in the past 5 years, my friends, family, and colleagues know that if they want to contact me, they just have to send me an SMS. So I don't really use my phone calls for voice anymore.
Okay.
Yeah, sorry. I think actually that's a fair point, that increasingly we are seeing moves to things like SMS and chat. So I actually think this application may get more use simply as a sort of easy way of getting Skype IM on your phone. So we know there are several solutions to do that, but getting the official one from Skype, and certainly for that sort of thing, this application works pretty well. It supports multiple chats at the same time, and you can do group chats. So if you're interested in sort of the instant messaging aspect of Skype, I think it's well worth a look. If you're more interested in the calls, well, take a look, but it may not be for you.
Yeah, it's worth noting as well that this is Java applications are getting rather more polished these days. And 2 or 3 years ago, a Java app was met by howls of horror from all and sundry, including me, myself. But this particular Skype Mobile, I actually had to tell Rafe, I'm sure you won't mind mentioning this, that it was a a Java app because it comes as an SIS file. It installs slickly. It runs slickly. And there's nothing to tell you really that it isn't a native S60 application other than scrolling down the install dialog and looking at the Symbian install type. So Java apps are getting more polished, and this is a good first step from Skype Mobile. But it is very late to the scene, and I for one will be wanting something a lot better and something native fairly soon. Should we move on now, Rafe?
Yes, yeah, absolutely.
Okay, you've been playing with the 5320 Express Music launched this week, and you went to the event in London. So what's your first impressions?
Right, so the 5320 is sort of a music phone that's targeted very much at the mid-market. It's going to be about €220 when it launches in the beginning of the third quarter of this year, and that's actually the cheapest S60 phone price, at least at launch. Obviously, once they've been on the market a while, the price does tend to drop. The major features really of this phone are that it looks just like a feature phone. You will have a great deal of difficulty telling it apart externally from a typical S6 Series 40 phone or any other feature phone. But it's got what you'd really expect. It's the usual suspects. It's HSDPA in terms of connectivity. There's a 3.5mm audio jack for listening to music. There's music controls on the side of the device. And there's a sort of standard keypad. There's a 2-megapixel camera on the back. It's not autofocus, so it's not a great camera. But one of the things that is interesting about it is it's one of the first of these sort of mobile phone from Nokia's rather than N-series or E-series to take advantage of some of the OV services. I'm thinking here things like Nokia Maps as well as the Music Store. And it's also specifically geared for playing N-Gage games on it, and it's got a couple of design tweaks to enable you to do it. It's designed to be held in landscape mode, and it's got grips on the back of the phone, and it's also got gaming keys. Actually, one of them is a double up of a rewind key, and one of it's a key on the bottom right-hand side of the device as you hold it in landscape mode. That key is also the My Own key, but it also is used for a fairly interesting bit of functionality, which is called Say and Play, which you hold down the button, and it pops up a thing saying, say the name of the music you want to hear, and you can say the album name, the artist name, or the track name, and it will then attempt to find that through voice recognition. It uses the same technologies used in voice dialing. And actually, in my experiments, I found it was pretty effective. I don't know how much use it really has, because that sort of thing is a bit gimmicky, and I don't know about you guys, but I always feel a bit silly when talking to my phone in public. Quite when you're on your own, it's okay because there's no one to laugh at you. But if you do it on the bus, yeah, sometimes you get some funny looks. But overall, I actually am really impressed with this phone, mainly because of the price point and the sort of the form factor. It's going to be really attractive to the mid-market, and I'm sure this one's going to sell really well come Christmas time of this year.
Yeah, I have a feeling I'm going to be asking for something like, yes, I'd like to hear Genesis Cinema Show, please, and I'll get a voice back saying, not found it. Rubbish track. No, you don't want to go there. That's prog rock. Try something more modern, sir. What about a bit of Bell and Sebastian or something along those lines? So I do hate voice activated stuff in general, because out in the real world, as you say, if you're on the bus, there's tremendous background noise which you don't already appreciate just to the human ear. You kind of filter it out, but you ask a machine, a phone, to try and analyze what you're saying against this mass of bus noise, train noise, chatter, and it's next to impossible. So as you said, this is something which will work well in your office and home, but I have my reservations how well it will work out in the real world. Stefan, have you got any opinions on the 5320?
Oh, of course. I would say Say and Play is a feature I will probably never use. But the fact that it's a feature pack 2 phone coming in at €220, I think that's a testament for how S60 is trying to be approached in the mid-range market, where a phone like this a year or two ago would have simply cost at least €350.
Absolutely.
And for it to come in that cheap is impressive.
Yeah, just to put that into perspective for UK people, I know not all AAS listeners are UK, but just for my own benefit, I guess that's around about £160, which I say is staggering for what is effectively a multimedia computer, as Nokia like to call them. And there's an awful lot of software power, processing power, and graphics power there. Rafe, do you want to come back on materials and other comments?
I'll just come back to sort of underlying what Stefan said, and I think it's a really important point to make in that it's actually seeing, you know, we've talked a lot about Nokia's software and services strategy, and while it has, you know, started to flourish at the high end, it's, you know, really starting to take off throughout their portfolio now. And that's obviously an absolutely necessary thing if the OV strategy is to succeed, because after all, in the mid-tier and the lower tiers, that's where the real numbers are. And if Nokia can encourage the mass market to take up these things, you know, it could be very important. And just to underline that, it's actually the first N-gauge compatible device that's non-N-series. We'll probably see a lot more of them in the future, and I wouldn't be surprised if something like the 6220 turns out to be N-gauge compatible. But if you think with a device like this, it could easily sell, you know, 5 million devices without too much trouble over the two quarters after it comes out. And that's a very significant number of people. And something like this device has a very long shelf life, and I'm sure we'll see it come out in developing countries as well. And I think it will be a very popular device, because more than any of the other early S60 mid-tier devices, this offers a lot more than just being a phone. It offers all the sort of bundled Nokia services, as we say, Maps, Engage, and you know, it really underlines that. One of the things that's good about it actually is it has the custom home screen, which sort of reinforces that idea that you can use it as more than just a phone. The sort of the music service is right there on the front of the screen, as is some of the things like Gallery and Share Online. But I just wanted to come back to one thing you said quickly there, the materials. And this is one thing that impressed me about this device, was the materials had clearly been very carefully thought about. Indeed, the whole design had a feeling, a real thought to it, that was much more about sort of the utility, while maintaining some looks as well. And I'd compare that to the N series, where I feel a lot of the design has gone towards being fashionable and looks. And I like to see a bit of utility in my design. So having grips on the back and having grippy sides is something I really like to see. Despite the fact, you know, this is relatively speaking cheap materials, they're plastics or rubbery plastics. They're not the sort of the metals you might see or the metallic plastics you might see in the N series. So it felt like a really robust device, and it fit really comfortably into the hand. It had the rounded edges. Might not be the smallest ever S60 phone. I think that's still with the E51. But it is very comfortable to hold, and it feels very firm in the grasp. And, you know, it's the details like that that I think really make the difference.
Yeah. The just going back to the price again, because I don't think there's ever been a pay-as-you-go S60 smartphone, one that's actually been cheap enough that the networks are able to somehow wangle a pay-as-you-go deal, a prepaid deal.
Certainly, but launch, yeah.
Yeah, but surely we can't be that far off now. And we talk about £160, £170 smartphone or whatever it was, €240. But in actual fact, when that's in the high street, that's going to be free on fairly lily contracts, sort of £15 a month, I'm guessing, which is within the range of almost everybody. So it is fascinating seeing these prices come down. Even I noticed that even the N95 Classic the other day is now only in quotes, only £245, which I think, itself is staggering, even though there's the newer model out. And Stefan just pointed out £173, so I wasn't quite right, but that's my mental maths for you. The euro is obviously sliding compared to the pound.
Yeah, and we have to remember that's actually before taxes, so you can probably put about 20% on the top at actually launch time. But as you say, it will go down, I'd have thought, to around £100, you know, six to 12 months after its release. And as you say, you know, on pay-as-you-go, especially now we're moving towards 18 to 24-month contracts in the UK, I think we might see a resurgence of people buying stuff as pay-as-you-go. And actually, you know, subsidies are disappearing elsewhere in the market. When you've got a mature market, subsidies for mobile phones aren't nearly so sustainable. I know in Finland, for a long time, there were no subsidies. There are indeed some, I think, on 3G phones. Is that right, Stefan?
Yeah, we have subsidies on 3G phones, but that was actually introduced in the past 12 months. And there's a law where you cannot put subsidies on a non-3G device, which I find kind of hilarious.
Yeah, but it does suggest that, you know, subsidies aren't something that will necessarily stick around forever, because I know, for example, in the Benelux countries, they have subsidies to a lesser degree. The UK is actually unusual in that it has very strong subsidy culture. So I think getting that price down is all important for S60 to go to really big numbers. And here we're obviously talking about hundreds of millions a year as opposed to tens of millions.
Yeah, there's. I have to say that my own preference has always been to buy unlocked, unbranded, and the contract free. If only because the second hand market is so buoyant. I don't know if any of you guys have been browsing eBay for things like smartphones, like an N95 or an E61 or that sort of thing. But as long as it's within the last two or so years, you can get something like 70 to 80% of the brand new price back on eBay. So you can, rather than getting your subsidy through the network, you can fork out your £300, £400 for a cutting-edge smartphone, use it for a year or so, and sell it for about 70% of the price, and you haven't had any being tied to a contract, any paying per month, and you can use a prepay SIM, et cetera, as long as their prepay is a good value in your country. So it's a very much a valid way of going forward these days, and that's certainly what I do. Rafe, any more comments?
Yeah, absolutely. No, I'd agree with that. Actually, I think that's the most cost-effective way to do things, especially if you're locked in. And even if you're locked into a longer contract, you can sort of get them through the network every now and then, but sort of be able to keep a refresher handset on your desk. And after all, we're all interested in the shiny toys to an extent by doing exactly as you say, the sort of eBay model.
Okay, just moving on then to the next thing on our agenda. This is insight number 22, and Rafe wanted to chat very briefly, and I did mention brief in the show notes. The subject of web runtimes and widgets is something which Rafe knows more about than anybody in the known universe, but I want a two or three minute summary, please, here, Rafe. Go.
I don't know as much as some people, but I just wanted to underline that Nokia this week at Web 2.0 Expo just revealed a few details about the next generation of web runtime. And basically, what you need to know from a consumer point of view is widgets will be able to access more things in your phone. So they'll be able to access your contacts database, your calendar, your audio and your music. But it also goes the other way. The phone will be able to send information about it up to the web, so things like GPS location. So this means you'll be able to have what they refer to as context-aware widgets, which means a widget can be aware of your location. And the example they give is, I think, actually fairly boring. It's a weather forecast that automatically changes its location based on GPS information. But it's easy to imagine sort of location-enabled searches where you say, I want to find, you know, say, the pub, and you don't have to specify the location because that's automatically done for you. It then saves some of the information from that search into your contacts database or adds an appointment when you buy a cinema ticket. So it enables a much richer user experience. Of course, this is a while off, and I would underline this probably won't be in handsets for about a year or so. The other thing, very briefly, that got mentioned was OpenC++, which is just the evolution or the next stage of OpenC that adds a few more standard programming libraries, which means we'll see more ports of application because it's more cross-platform development. So you can expect to see a few more Linux and open source based programs coming across to S60. So that can only be a good thing from the point of view of developers. So there you go, Steve, 2 minute summary.
Very good, Ray. That's a world record. Stefan, anything you want to add?
Oh, yeah. I just want to say that the entire industry is sort of underscoring what contextual aware widgets are and the sense of how important it is because Nokia is the first one to implement it. The fact that it will come into Series 60 handsets first, S60 handsets first, and then it will go into Series 40 handsets, and you're talking about huge volumes, and depending on the implementation, other handset manufacturers can adopt the same JavaScript calls, and now all of a sudden you have a standard for accessing the platform-level APIs across every single operating system using nothing but a browser. And that's impressive, but we'll see if it's going to happen.
Yeah, I think in parallel with the context-aware, location-aware widgets, there's things like JIQ, which, as you know, Google bought up last year, and I think that's surely got to be something major coming out from them, and anything from someone as large as Google is worth paying attention to, and that's going to get mass market appeal and traction simply because of who's behind it. And there's another thing called Gypsy released in the last released recently, which I'm going to be looking at on head-to-heading. And again, we're looking at intelligent software which can collate information from your location, from your contacts, from your calendar, your interests, what you're interested in terms of news and information, and bring it all together. So there's this plus the widgets and various other solutions, and it's going to be a fascinating year. Rafe?
Yeah, absolutely. Just to underline what both of you said, I mean, widgets really act as a model for accessing web services, and that's, as you say, things like JIQ, but it can be any number of things. You know, it can extend into e-commerce, and I think a lot of problems, you know, we talk a lot about the mobile internet, but it's all about creating a positive user experience, and what you can do with widgets is set it up to access a web service or post pictures or whatever it is you happen to be doing, and do it in a way that looks like a client application, which is generally a more familiar and easy to use experience for the end consumer. And so I think widgets is kind of that kind of easy to create client model for accessing web services does have a lot of potential. And, you know, this context awareness adds in a whole extra layer that just makes it, you know, feel like you can offer that little bit more. But as you say, even just on the basis of, you know, being all this cross-platform stuff, as Stefan says, you know, I think there's an awful lot of details in the implementation, and there's some questions about security model, but there is a lot of potential there. But in one level, all it really is just another way of developing for these phones, but with the caveat that, you know, web developers are very common, and it's a very easy and quick thing to do. So in terms of economics of development, I think it has significant implications there.
That's great, Rafe. Just before we leave, we've got about another 5 or 6 minutes, so I wanted to have our statutory, regulatory, the one thing we always put in, which is the waffle bit. Today's waffle is going to be led by me, and I've got some ideas about handedness, not left or right-handedness with handsets, but whether you use one or two. We were just talking there about real-world experience and user experience, and of course the Apple iPhone has been talked about ad infinitum as providing a fabulous, you know, a wonderful thing. You poke at the screen, you slide on the screen, and I've been also looking at recently at review handsets come in, things like the LG Beauty, and there's also the Samsung CROIX based devices, all of which have iPhone copying to a degree, two-handed use, where you hold it in one hand and you prod at the screen with your other, with the other hand using a finger. Windows Mobile, of course, has had a stylus-based interface for a long time. Same idea, hold it in one hand, whip your stylus out, and you prod at the screen. Now, I have a real problem with this. I suspect I'm preaching to the choir, talking to Rafe and Stefan here. But when you're out and about, if you're a parent, you're holding your child's hand, perhaps. You're on public transport, you're hanging from a tube strap. You've got shopping bags in one hand. Perhaps you're driving in a traffic jam. You've got one hand on the wheel or on the gear stick. You wake up in the morning, you're lying in bed on your side, you hold the handset in one hand. You're eating or drinking. All of these means that one-handed use beats two-handed use every single time. Having a two-handed device, it looks wonderful when you're reviewing it in the quiet of your own home, in good, in optimum conditions. You take a smartphone or a phone out into the real world, and I contend that one-handed use works better 90% of the time and produces a better user experience. Rafe? Oh, Stefan. there's a show chat channel, by the way, guys. People listen to this, and I just read the wrong comment. Stefan first. Go for it.
I would say that I always consume my information with one hand only, because I'm always either holding someone's hand or on the bus or I'm eating something. So the fact that I can consume information and play with my smartphone with one hand is really important to me. The only time I hold it with two hands is when I write an SMS, and that's essentially it.
Yeah, Rafe?
Yeah, I absolutely agree with this rant. And I actually think people look at touch in the wrong way. You know, they're talking about a touch instead of a one-handed experience. And, you know, I think actually Nokia have got the right idea here, in that they're adding touch to the platform just as another input option. And the truth of it is, in all of this, there are times when one-handed usage makes most sense, and there are times when you have got two hands, and there are times when, you know, a soft key entry is best. And I actually think for text entry, most of the time, you know, T9 is superior when you take into account the size of keyboards and the size of devices. And touch, there are some occasions when I think it is better, and I actually think often the web browsing experience can be done quite well with touch, but there are a lot of times when you need a bit more sophistication, or you want, as you say, to do things without having to use two hands, and, you know, touch just doesn't make sense. So I completely agree with you, and I think the move towards touch only devices strikes me as very strange. I think they have a place, but I think they'll only ever be about 5 to 10% of the market, and what we'll see is sort of a maturing of the ideas, and touch will be added just as one other way of accessing the device, and it will, you know, the best devices will maintain the ability to do everything with one hand, from the sort of the soft keys and the D-pad, but will have touch as sort of an added extra when you do want to use it. Mainly, I think for media consumption is where it makes sense, and I think that's why the iPhone does so well. It's a very good iPod. It's not a very good phone. So yes, you know, 100% behind you on this particular rant or this particular bit of waffle, Steve.
Yeah, the web use is interesting because the web browsing is the real exclusion. That's the odd bit out. Most factors on a say S60 or a smartphone, everything's geared around one-handed use and it works perfectly. When you get into the web browser in S60, now it's in theory the same web browser as on the Apple iPhone, but even though it's pretty good, it's nowhere near as good an experience because web browsing is such a you can sit down away from distractions, and your purpose for that 5 minutes or 10 minutes is to browse the web. You're not expecting to do something else like hold someone's hand, look after your shopping, hang off a tube strap. Yeah, quite often when you're web browsing, you're sat down in comfort somewhere, and you can actually use two hands with complete freedom. So I think for that use only, it does make sense. And maybe with the increased use of web-based applications and applets, then that will make place more of a factor. But I do agree with you, Rafe. I think adding touch to existing S60 devices with buttons gives you the best of both worlds.
Yes, no, I agree. And actually, I just add one other element to this, which is another input mechanism, which I think should be distinct from touch, and that's stylus entry. Now, there are very, very few entries where stylus is best, in my opinion, and I think that's been sort of best exemplified by the fact that the UIQ pen-based devices never really took off in terms of getting really popular as a form of interacting with your device. But when you're entering certain languages, particularly the Asian ones, which are not necessarily alphabet-based, which are character-based, actually having handwriting recognition is a great way of getting text into the device nice and quickly. The other area I'd sort of highlight for this is when you're doing fine editing work, and that can be with images or video, because you can get much more accurate selections with a stylus than you can with a finger. And obviously, using a D-pad is a bit fiddly when you're doing that kind of selection work. So even stylus is, I think have a place on phones, and maybe the ideal device combines everything into one, and you'll be able to use it to use everything, and perhaps that's what Nokia are planning with their future devices, but I think that's a wait and see. But I suspect that Stefan's not going to agree with me on stylus. I know from past experience he's not keen on them.
No, I really don't understand the whole stylus phenomenon, only for the fact that you can lose your stylus quite often, and the fact that you have to take it out, fiddle around with it, and they're usually extremely small and plasticky, and then you have to remember to put it back in. It always presents a problem. I've had a touchscreen enabled smartphone before for the longest time. It was a Trio 650. Which wasn't too popular in the UK or in the EU at all, but in the States it was huge. And the fact that I can use my keyboard and just hit the screen whenever a huge button appeared, as opposed to using my T-pad, that was fantastic. And I think, as you said, the combination of having a touchscreen as well as a keypad is the best solution, as opposed to having an entire screen like the iPhone.
Yeah. So as ever, the devices in the future will continue to be compromises, because there is no way to please all the people all the time, and there never will be. Yeah. Just as an example of how strongly Stefan feels there, in the chat window he wrote, "Death to styli."
I think it's also worth underlining how much personal subjectivity comes into this, because different people prefer different things, and as you see, that there is no one device to rule them all, because we each have different needs and different priorities in the way we use our devices. And although we blithely talk about how having touch plus D-pad and soft keys is best, that of course has a cost implication, and for some people that will make devices too expensive, and so they'll just stick with the very basic soft key approach, which, if you're just using it as a phone, really is the best solution. Touch really makes sense, as we've said, for a few things, and they do tend to be sort of higher end, sort of more creative for consumption functions. If you're just wanting to dial a number, a numeric keypad on the phone is best. So, I think, personal preferences and the way you use your device is extremely important when you consider what's best for you, which is why I think, touchscreens alone will only ever be sort of a few percent of the market, maybe 5%. The combined ones may be, anywhere between 15 and 20%, but I still think the majority of phones will be non-touchscreen and will just be soft key driven.
There we are. There's a prediction for the next 2 or 3 years, I guess. Okay, I think we've run out of time, but thank you very much to Rafe Blanford.
Cheers, Steve.
Goodbye, and to Stefan Constantinescu.
Thanks, Steve.
All right, bye. Thanks for listening.